Post-Hypnotic Press presents an unabridged recording of Jennings at Large by Anthony Backeridge, narrated by Simon Vance. Chapter 1. The boy in the end bed sat propped against his pillow, speaking into a tooth mug held before his lips like a microphone. "Hello, Earth! Hello, Earth! Moon calling Earth! This is Space Pilot Jennings calling Mission Control. Are you receiving me?" From the bed across the gangway, a fair-haired boy in glasses and blue-striped pyjamas removed a similar tooth mug from his left ear and called back, "Can't hear a thing, Jen. Take your face out of your beaker and stop mumbling." The astronaut jammed his jaw into the tooth mug and waggled his chin experimentally. To his delight, the beaker stayed in place, moving up and down with his chin like a plastic beard. There was no point in old Darby telling him to speak up, he thought. With so much noise going on in the dormitory, it was no wonder that messages from the moon were failing to get through. He removed his chin beard and shouted above the clamour of boys' voices about him. "Okay, I'll start again. If you can't hear, try lip-reading." "Can't you get through, Jennings?" Venables, an untidy 11-year-old in the next bed, hooted with derision. "What's the dialing code to ring up the Earth from the moon?" he demanded. "If I were you, I'd reverse the charges. It's a long-distance call, don't forget." Jennings ignored the advice. "Moon calling Earth! Moon calling Earth!" he bellowed into his plastic mug. "We landed here at tea time and have been doing, what had they been doing? Oh, yes. We have been doing a lot of dangerous exploits. No sign of any planet dwellers around these parts, just a lot of old stars and stripes and hammers and sickles lying about." The man at Mission Control, alias C.E.J. Derbyshire, tossed his makeshift earphone aside. He'd had enough of this game to be going on with, and in any case he wanted to finish his library book before the duty master came in to call silence. But Venables decided the make-believe was worth carrying a stage further. No sign of any planet dwellers. He'd soon put that right. Flinging back the bedclothes, he jumped up and stood bouncing on his bed like a clown on a trampoline. "Moon man hide in crater when Earthman touch down," he announced in the metallic tones of a television robot. "Moon man exterminate Earthman. Big chief moonshine make Earthman bite pumice dust." He signalled for support to Temple and Atkinson further down the dormitory, who at once stood up on their beds chanting aggressive slogans at the tops of their penetrating voices. "Earthman go home! Earthman go home! Earthman out! Out! Out!" The noise was deafening, until the dormitory door swung open and Mr. Carter stood on the threshold, his fingers in his ears and his eyes closed in mock anguish. The shouting died and the demonstrators got back into bed, safe in the knowledge that on this night of all nights the duty master was unlikely to say very much about the noise unless it threatened to get out of hand. On any other night, yes, but not tonight, for this was the last night of term. The last night of term is different from all those that have gone before. It is a time when excitement bubbles up in anticipation of tomorrow's freedom, a time when school rules can be relaxed to stop the pressure from building up into an explosion. Mr. Carter, the senior master at Linbury Court School, had been teaching boys long enough to have gained a deep insight into the workings of the youthful mind. The boys liked him and he enjoyed their confidence, so even at this time of unwonted freedom they had no thought of taking advantage of him. The duty master unplugged his ears. "Tomorrow will come when it's ready," he said. "No amount of shouting will make it arrive sooner. So for the sake of all our eardrums, I suggest we cut the volume down to a mere 95 decibels or so."
"Sorry, sir, but we had to speak loudly," Venables explained. "You see, the planet dwellers were ganging up on the Earthmen and I was trying to broadcast my famous first words to the human race," the astronaut broke in. "Only I couldn't get through because Mission Control wanted to finish his library book before you called silence, sir."
Mr. Carter had no intention of calling for immediate silence in an atmosphere so charged with excitement. He was willing to wait until the taut guy ropes of their restlessness had slackened of their own accord. In half an hour they would be ready to settle down for the night. But first they must be allowed to greet the end of term with a song made up by past generations of Linburians and added to over the years by anyone able to express an apt comment in verse. By tradition, The song was sung in the dormitories every night during the final week of term, building up into an ear-splitting climax on the last evening of all. If the Moon Men will call off their demo, they'll just have time for a farewell performance of Crossing Off the Days, Mr. Carter announced. But they'd better get a move on, because I'm aiming to call silence in here before my supper gets cold. Dormitory 4 needed no urging. Sitting bolt upright in their beds, they awaited the signal from Jennings, who now stood on his pillow holding his toothbrush like a conductor's baton. Derbyshire produced his recorder from his locker and sat poised to accompany the choir, omitting those quavers that were always too fast for him to keep up with.
"Fire away," said Mr. Carter, turning to leave the room. "See if you can get through it in 4 minutes flat."
As he went downstairs to see what was happening in Dormitory 2, the strains of the Linbury end-of-term song pursued him all the way down to the next landing. "The term is nearly over, we've been crossing off the days, until tomorrow morning when we go our different ways. 7 days, 6 days, 5 days, 4 days, 3 days, 2 days, one, and the holidays will really have begun." The tune was lively, the tempo fast. Nobody could remember who had composed it, for it was a hodgepodge of improvisations borrowed from older melodies. Then came the chorus, in a different rhythm, and taken up now by the dormitories on the lower landing, in unison with the boys on the floor above. Passing the open door of Dormitory 3, Mr. Carter winced as the chorus assailed his ears at full volume. "Excuse our breaking out in song, believe you me, it won't last long. We'll let off steam and then we'll stop, either that or we'll blow our top, for the end of term is drawing near, holidays will soon be here, pack our bags and we'll be off, Linbury, goodbye." By now all the dormitories had joined in. The words of verse 2, amplified by the well of the staircase, were wafted into the staff room on the ground floor where Mr. Wilkins was finishing off Form 3's reports. "No more French and Latin, no more English, no more maths, no more risk of masters turning into psychopaths, no examinations to confuse my poor old brain, no more risk of going crazy with the strain." Mr. Wilkins paused in the act of writing his comments on Jennings's progress in mathematics. Judging by the boy's examination results, there was little fear of his brain becoming unhinged by the strain of the term's work. Upstairs in the dispensary, Matron was tidying shelves and putting away the medical equipment she would not be needing until the following term. The full-throated singing from Dormitory 6 along the landing was loud enough to set the bottles rattling on the dispensary shelves. "Goodbye, lumpy mattress in my freezing dormitory. Goodbye, my school dinner, and goodbye to my school tea. Bulletproof potatoes and bomb-proof hard-boiled eggs, and goodbye to cocoa made from diesel dregs." The song was sheer nonsense, of course, but she couldn't help smiling at the parody of boarding school life implied by the words. Freezing dormitory, indeed, with the warm July sun still slanting in through the western windows. They'd been keen enough on their bomb-proof eggs at tea time, and at supper they'd queued up for second helpings of the cocoa they professed to despise. The flippant words and the catchy tune followed Mr. Carter along the corridor as he made his tour of the dormitories. By the time he got back to the top landing again, the singers had reached the last verse. "Hurry up tomorrow, for tomorrow I shall be miles away from boarding school, miles from Linbury. 7 weeks of liberty when we're let off the chain. Then it's back to the treadmill once again." A final rousing chorus and the singers were ready to settle down for the night, exhausted by their vocal efforts. Indeed, when Mr. Carter looked into Dormitory 4 to call silence, the only boy with enough breath left for coherent speech was the astronaut in the end bed, who had resumed his news bulletin from outer space and was again trying to contact Mission Control. "Stand by for important announcement. I'm going to repeat my famous first words in case you hadn't tuned in properly," he was saying into his plastic tooth mug. "When I first stepped out onto the moon, I said to myself, 'Aha,' I said, 'it's just one small step for little old me, but a giant leap for mankind.' Make sure you copy it down right, because it'll go down in the history books." But nobody was listening. Least of all Mission Control, who was lying back on his pillow thinking of all the things he was hoping to do in the summer holidays. Derbyshire's daydreams seldom bore much resemblance to what actually happened in real life. But that didn't matter. On the last night of term, there was ample excuse for any 11-year-old to build up fantastic pictures in his mind.